This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
You are listening to The Morning Run. I'm Shazana Mokhtar with Wong Xiaoning and Keith Kam. Now, in half an hour, we have the breakfast grill. We've got a really interesting conversation to cap the week.
Yes, we do. Unfortunately, it's also going to remind myself and Keith how very old we are, because we're going to be reviewing the Asian financial crisis of 1997.
Has it been 25 years?
Yeah, oh my goodness. That's how long I've been working, roughly.
Quarter of a century.
Don't say that, Keith. But anyway, it was a very traumatic time for many of us in Asia. Mm-hmm. Unemployment rates were extremely high. There was very little money. People were selling their homes. Currency was going all over the place. Ringgit to the dollar was 7. It was tragic. I mean, a lot of companies actually folded. A lot of businesses collapsed. And people actually had to declare bankruptcy. So we're going to have a look back with Russell Napier. He's the co-founder of Electronic Research Interchange. Philip C is going to have that conversation. And it's going to be so interesting, because I know Russell Napier personally. He was a broker at CLSA, and once upon a time I was a fund manager, and I think it's going to be a good time to find out what are the lessons that we can actually learn to prevent another Asian financial crisis. So do tune in. That's going to be happening after the 8 a.m. news bulletin.
From one crisis, though, we're going to another. We're taking a look at Myanmar. The execution of 4 democracy activists by the Myanmar junta has drawn condemnation from all corners of the international community, including the UN Security Council and ASEAN. We have the ASEAN chair, Cambodia, issuing a statement expressing its strong disappointment in the junta's actions, despite appeals by Prime Minister Hun Sen for these sentences to be reconsidered.
Individual ASEAN members, including Malaysia, also came out to denounce the military government there. Foreign Minister Dato' Sri Saifuddin Abdullah said that the junta's decision made a mockery of the ASEAN 5-point consensus, and also suggested that Myanmar be barred from sending political representatives to any international ministerial-level meetings.
ASEAN efforts to resolve the crisis have generally remained ineffective 18 months since the coup in February 2020. So can the bloc realistically make a difference? And what levers does it actually have?
For analysis, we speak to Thomas Daniel, Senior Fellow at the Institute for Strategic and International Studies Malaysia, or ISIS Malaysia. Thomas, good morning. Thank you very much for joining us today. Could you give us your take on what the recent execution of 4 democracy activists signal about the Myanmar military government's strategy in the ongoing crisis? Are they really just digging their heels in on their position?
Hi, good morning. Look, I don't know about a strategy, but I think what it does signal is that this junta is very determined to snuff out any domestic opposition and any hope it might inspire. I think one thing we need to understand about the junta is that it sees domestic developments in zero-sum terms. So victory and control must be absolute, and anything less would mean survival is at stake, coupled with the fact that the Tatmadaw, especially its officer corps, is often thought to be an extremely insular in terms of its outlook, in terms of how it thinks. Yes.
I'm going to bring this conversation back to ASEAN. It's been largely ineffective in making any headway to resolve the crisis. Where do you think the bloc erred?
I don't know whether it's so much about making errors as opposed to whether ASEAN can actually manage the crisis in a way that it wants to or that it's expected to. I think this regional organization is an association, right, of 10 sovereign states. That means 10 different decisions that have to operate by 10 different decision makers operating by consensus. And there is just no consensus over ASEAN's response to Myanmar. The organization is also built around several key principles, including non-interference, which naturally limits what it can do. I think in this case, it's not a matter of ASEAN making an error. It's whether ASEAN was really designed for this. And I don't think it was. What ASEAN can do is facilitate and encourage, which it has not been able to do so far, because one party in this, the junta, has been extremely recalcitrant.
To put it bluntly, though, is ASEAN really pointless in all this, since there's no interference? And I mean, all they do, what we seem to see, is that all they do is they meet up and they pat each other on the back for a great job well done when this issue is still ongoing.
You know, that's a really, really good point, because that is a concern that some people are having. You have, you know, increasing sections of the population in Myanmar, and perhaps, you know, observers in other countries, including ASEAN member states, wondering what is the point of the regional organization in a question like this. I think this question is also being asked by certain ASEAN member states and policymakers, which is why you see some ASEAN member states taking, you know, a particularly strident stance and sort of strong statements on this. So again, this is a question that, you know, with the caveat that one needs to understand the way the regional organization was formed and what it was entailed to do, and whether the expectations of it today does not tally with the way the organization is structured. With that caveat, I think ASEAN, you know, ASEAN members and leaders also need to ask themselves the question then, you know, is this all the organization is, or does it aspire to be something a bit more?
Do you think this could be the start of a change in ASEAN's engagement with Myanmar?
You mean the executions, right?
Yeah, I mean with the Myanmar with the Tatmadaw going forward, do you see ASEAN being a little bit more aggressive, since there are some signs that certain members of the bloc are keen to shift their views?
Sure, I think it's really, really hard to say. I mean, certain member states, I mean, all member states really, I would say, have generally expressed some amount of disappointment. Now, some individual member states, again, have come out more strongly than others. Malaysia in particular, after FM Saifuddin, you know, has come out quite strongly among compared to his peers. But then again, you know, it remains to be seen. I think in this case, it is a junta that has continuously you know, work to ignore ASEAN's efforts in trying to facilitate the conflict, in trying to bring Myanmar back towards a degree of peace and normalcy. So I don't see anything. I don't see anything has changed from the part of the junta. And unfortunately, I just looking at ASEAN's track record on this, I don't know if ASEAN will be willing to go further, or whether it can go further. So I guess we have to see next week.
What about in terms of ASEAN's engagement with the National Unity Government, Thomas? Do you think that, have you seen shifts in how the bloc views the two sides, or is this still very much within the, I guess, individual member states space?
Okay. I think there's really been a general reluctance to openly engage with the NUG, precisely because the bloc is apprehensive about how the junta would react, right? And, you know, we saw very harsh criticism from Naypyidaw when Saifuddin met his NUG counterpart in Washington a few months ago. So I think, like it or not, the military junta is a stakeholder here. It is a very distasteful stakeholder, to be sure, but still a legitimate one. You know, they control the facts on the ground. They control access to distribute aid and access to imprison NLD leaders, you know, still at least. It doesn't mean that ASEAN member states haven't been engaging with the NUG. In fact, you know, several other ASEAN member states have been dealing with them, but quietly. I think the difference here is that Malaysia was the first one who did so openly in a public fashion at a very high level. And one more thing I would point out is that recently, Cambodia's foreign minister, who is also a special envoy to Myanmar, you know, he did an interview recently where he implied that there were both public and less visible efforts by ASEAN, although, you know, he has been very careful not to say that ASEAN has been in touch even informally with the NUG.
Okay, I'm just curious though, besides ASEAN, do you think there are other countries, is it the obvious one, China, that could persuade the junta to change its course?
Okay. Wow. Since we're going into the naming game here, China is a very important partner to Myanmar. But I would like to, you know, highlight that there are a few others here. It's countries like China, countries like India, which are both immediate neighbors to Myanmar and significant powers. Countries like Japan, South Korea, and in Southeast Asia individually, you know, more important than the regional bloc. You know, you've got Thailand, Vietnam, Cambodia. These countries still maintain, a range of relations, whether it's trade, diplomatic, security relations with Myanmar. So which means Myanmar is not as isolated as it was in the past. You know, I mean, it's generally isolated from the West, but it's still not as isolated as it was, and not from its key neighbors and trading partners. So there is some conversation about whether ASEAN member states or ASEAN should look at working with these key trade partners to try and, you know, either cajole or to push some sort of movement from NAPIDOR. But then again, we have to ask ourselves whether there is actual interest by these key countries to do more than they're currently doing, because their interest in Myanmar is pretty significant, which, you know, you can see by the way they craft their statements about Myanmar, or, you know, in terms of what they say and, more importantly, what they don't say.
Thomas, thanks very much for speaking to us this morning. That was Thomas Daniel, Senior Fellow at ISIS Malaysia, giving us the lay of the land in terms of what's happening in Myanmar after 18 months of a crisis, nothing really progressing on this front.
Yeah, what does this mean then, though, after these executions? Is ASEAN going to really change its tone and tack in dealing with Myanmar, or does another third country have to come and step in and resolve the issue?
It's difficult because Thomas said that ASEAN's formation itself is one of non-interference.
Yeah, it's a very slow diplomatic approach, right? Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, we just have to wait and see whether things have to escalate before it gets better. I mean, I've got a personal connection to Myanmar. My dad has business there, and my friends and some of them I call God brothers. They are having trouble making ends meet because there's just no business as well.
It's a really sad situation, and I think all eyes are going to be on what ASEAN does or says next. There will be an ASEAN ministerial meeting next week, and there's also going to be the ASEAN summit in November. We'll be watching to see what happens. 7:47 in the morning, we're heading into some messages, and we'll come back with the discussion on the implications of the anti-hopping bill that was passed by Parliament yesterday. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.